It is Wednesday, September 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the Turkish president says his country is ready to join an international effort to liberate the Syrian city of Raqqa from Islamic State. We get reaction to the possible ouster.
The quicker we can do that, the better off everyone will be to demonstrate that the Islamic State is really not an Islamic State.
U.S. President Barack Obama tells young Southeast Asians they have unprecedented opportunity. And we examine the continuing debate over music copyright infringement. It's all ahead. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says his country would be ready to join any future operation proposed by the United States to liberate the Syrian city of Raqqa from Islamic State. Turkish media report Erdogan told journalists traveling home with him Wednesday from the G20 meeting. The issue was brought up by U.S. President Barack Obama during their talks on the sideline of the summit in China. He said Turkish and U.S. military officials could meet to discuss capturing Raqqa, the de facto capital of Islamic State. Meanwhile, Tunisia's defense minister has warned that Islamic State fighters forced out of their Libyan stronghold in Sirte may be flowing south to join Boko Haram or west to pose a threat to the rest of North Africa. Speaking at a security conference this week in Paris, Farhat Hachani said about 1,000 Tunisians have joined jihadist groups, and with Islamic State's recent setbacks, they may return home, and said there's no regional strategy to deal with it. Media reports said despite losing territory in its self-proclaimed caliphate in Syria and Iraq since its high point in 2014, along with the deaths of several senior leaders, the IS group remains a potent threat. It continues to attract new recruits, obtains weapons, and carries out international terrorist attacks. Reuters, in a commentary, said the Sunni Muslim jihadist group has inspired or carried out a terrorist attack every 84 hours since June. R. Nicholas Pallarino, a visiting professor at Georgetown University here in Washington, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty one of the biggest setbacks to the IS group was the loss of the Syrian border region following Turkey's intervention 2 weeks ago.
They are certainly losing ground, and that border area is certainly important to them. They're going to end up using other means to try to smuggle out the oil, smuggling routes, get weapons in and supplies. So that is a major setback. However, what you still have out there is the ideology. And that ideology is not going to go away anytime soon. And that's what the United States and Western nations and other countries in the Middle East who are aligned with us need to focus on.
U.S. officials say the group lost about 20% of the territory it once held in Syria, about half of what it controlled in Iraq. Should the focus now shift from territorial reclamation?
They're hunkered down now in Raqqa and Mosul, so it's going to be difficult to dislodge them. But the quicker we can do that, the better off everyone will be to demonstrate that the Islamic State is really not an Islamic State.
Charles Lister of the Middle East Institute said IS has faced a campaign of exponential pressure that has steadily constrained their capacity to fight, operate, earn, and to credibly claim an expanding caliphate, but it remains a highly adaptable organization with extensive asymmetric reach.
What Mr. Lister is talking about is them sending out all these tweets and using social media to extend its reach beyond their territory. That's the point I always go back to, is how they spread their ideology, and we have to counter that ideology.
IS is likely to continue, according to experts, a trend that's already underway, consolidating core urban populated areas, rebuilding the asymmetric capabilities that allow it to carry out incessant bombings, and we saw those Tuesday in Syria.
Well, of course they're going to continue that form of terrorism as much as they can, and they'll use bases in Mosul, use bases in Raqqa to try to extend their reach and undermine the influence of the Iraqi government, especially. Until we can get in there and root them out, they'll continue to do this.
R. Nicholas Pallarino said even if Islamic State is defeated, its radical ideology will live on, and other groups like al-Nusra are waiting in the wings to create their own caliphate and expand it throughout the region. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's going on?
Well, we talk a lot about digital media, but there are two stories that are trending that deal with traditional media today. So the first one is an endorsement for Hillary Clinton from the Dallas Morning News. Now, this is a newspaper out of Dallas, Texas. And the reason why this is significant is because it's the first time they've endorsed a Democrat in over 75 years.
Wow.
So a lot of people pointing to this, saying that this is a sign of how unpalatable Donald Trump is as a candidate, that this paper, who has supported Republicans, a very solidly conservative newspaper, is supporting the Democrat in this election. On the Donald Trump side, where we're seeing a new development in his interaction with the press, namely he's lifting bans on press credential that his credentials that his campaign has enacted. For example, the Washington Post, he felt had some negative coverage of him, so enacted a ban that they were not allowed to have press credentials. And there's a lot of hope that this is a sign from the Trump campaign that they're trying to get serious and trying to work more with the press. So many viewing that as a positive development from his campaign. But let's set aside silly things like U.S. politics and talk about the real story today, which is hashtag Apple event. In Cupertino, California, Apple set to announce the iPhone 7. Lots of rumors about that. The nice thing about this event is Apple's very media savvy and tech savvy. You can watch it online and you can follow along as people live tweet and live blog it. One of the initial things people have been talking about, one of the rumors, is that the new iPhone will get rid of the traditional headphone jack and you'll be required to use the Lightning port that all the phones have. So you'll have to have the special iPhone headphones that Apple will produce. So a lot of people uneasy about this, saying, well, what am I going to do with my headphones? How will I be able to connect them? But they're hopeful that there may be some solutions Apple offers that will not just allow people to rely on Apple. There may be other ways to do that. But exciting news out of California, and I'm sure we'll be covering it again tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of those iPhone users out there can't wait to get the newest edition.
And can't wait to tweet about it.
No. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top stories trending. Fighting in Syria has displaced about 100,000 people in 8 days. Gabon's president balks at the EU suggestion of an election recount. The U.S. military says airstrikes killed 13 militants in Yemen. And Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump says Americans have big hearts but cannot risk a flow of refugees. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
2016 will be 1 second longer than usual after a leap second is tacked on at 1 second before 2017 begins. Officials at the U.S. Naval Observatory says that the additional second will be added to its master clock in Washington, D.C. at 23 hours, 59 minutes, 59 seconds, Coordinated Universal Time, or UTC. Traditionally, measurements of time have been based on the rotation of the Earth. These days, official time is measured with an atomic clock, which uses the oscillation of the nucleus of an atom and its electrons to provide very accurate time. Differences between time kept by atomic clocks and time kept by Earth's rotation pop up every now and then. To keep time synchronized between the two systems, leap seconds are either added or removed from atomic time, since it would be impossible to slow or speed up Earth's rotation. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, who wrote that song? Well, the debate about copyright continues. U.S. President Barack Obama Wednesday told a group of young people from across Southeast Asia that it's not enough to dream about their plans for the future, but that they have to actually do the work. At a town hall event in Laos with people involved in the U.S.-sponsored Young Southeast Asian Leaders Initiative, Obama said young people have historically been the key to progress and development.
You should never be discouraged because you have more opportunity today to make a difference in the world than any generation before.
VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas is traveling with the president, and she tells me about the town hall.
Well, he really wanted to talk to them about the future of Southeast Asia, why it was important. But really, he also answered a lot of their questions. They had many very good questions, from policy questions in the Middle East to, you know, will his initiatives reaching out to young people continue beyond his presidency? And that's, he said yes. He said it will. And so that has been critical throughout his presidency. In terms of engaging this region, it's been on multiple levels. It's been through businesses. It's been on a government level. It's been through security. It's been through diplomacy. And one thing he has done throughout also is reach out to young people. In fact, that is one of his favorite things he said is when he has these town halls with these young people, because they ask a lot of good questions. They also laugh a lot, and you could tell it's something he really enjoys. So it was his final trip to Asia, his 11th trip, and he spent that time today fielding questions, making sure that he called on students from a range of countries.
And, of course, Mr. Obama spent part of his youth in Indonesia, in Southeast Asia, so he's certainly familiar with the region.
Yeah, and he spoke about that. He spoke about his mother working there, growing up there. His sister's half Indonesian. And so he has personal ties to it as well. But I think he believes that this region is critical to the U.S. future prosperity, because so much is happening there, to its security, because there is a lot of tension there, very critical relationships, and a very, you know, what are the challenges? It's such a diverse region, from democracies to very oppressive governments, lots of accusations of human rights abuses in that area, yet you have this really dynamic youth that want to, very sort of up-and-coming, very engaged. And so he spoke about all those things today.
Did he speak at all about the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal, which has been controversial, and Congress has yet to pass that?
Well, I told you these young people ask a lot of good questions, and that was one of them. Will TPP pass? And he says, yes, I think it will, because it's good for the country. However, he acknowledged, even if after the U.S. election, because he said politics are tough at home right now. It's not a popular subject. You know, a lot of people in America believe that trade is costing Americans jobs. So it's a political issue in this presidential year. He said, though, even if it's after the elections, he believes that TPP will pass. This is, of course, critical to his rebalance strategy, because without, you know, the TPP, this trade deal, is the sort of economic core of the rebalance. And many analysts say, you know what, without the economic element, the benefit from it, this rebalance is not going to happen. So that's why they posed the question today. And in the president's position, yes, it's going to happen eventually. And of course, it's important to his legacy.
Well, also, Mr. Obama visited a center in Vientiane, the capital there. It's called the Cooperative Orthotic and Prosthetic Enterprise, which helps those who have been, you know, maimed, affected by some of the ordnance, the bombs that occurred by U.S. forces during the 1960s and 1970s. What was that like?
Well, I mean, I have to say, I was standing right there, I heard him speak, and it's a very solemn, sort of serious remarks. I mean, there was a lot of terrible things that happened in that period. So many bombs rained down on the country and the people. It created so much pain, and that legacy is still there. You know, unexploded ordnance are still hurting people, are causing the nation to not be able to develop. And so, you know, he visited this particular center the day after he announced that the U.S. is pledging $90 million to help survey the country, find out where they might be, those unexploded ordnance, and help to get rid of them. And so those were some of the questions he was asking the director of the center today. Like, once we find them, once we survey, we know where they are, what's the next step? Who does that? Who gets rid of them? So he was down to some nitty-gritty details.
VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas in Laos. One American astronaut and two Russians landed safely in Kazakhstan early Wednesday after spending nearly 6 months performing work on the International Space Station. Nearly 4 hours after departing the orbital outpost, a Russian Soyuz capsule carrying Jeff Williams, Alexei Ovchinin, and Oleg Skorpochka landed in central Kazakhstan early Wednesday morning. Williams became the U.S. record holder for the most time spent in orbit, with 534 days spent in space across four separate missions. Fellow astronaut Scott Kelly previously held the record with 520 days in space. The world record is held by Russian Gennady Padalka with 879 days in orbit. This is VOA.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. When is music original, and when does it cross the line as a copy of previous work? It's a question that comes up surprisingly often and is being confronted in a high-profile case, as VOA Top 20 host Ray McDonald explains to International Edition's Jim Stevenson.
Everybody get up.
Often in the music world, things aren't cleared. In fact, they're blurred.
Extremely blurred. Never more so than in the 2015 blurred lines ruling. You might remember last year a jury ruled that Pharrell Williams and Robin Thicke were guilty of copyright infringement with their hit song Blurred Lines. They copied substantial portions of the 1977 Marvin Gaye hit Gotta Give It Up. And they would have to give the family of Marvin Gaye $5.3 million and 50% of the royalties from Blurred Lines. Mm-hmm. Now the musical community is rallying as Williams and Thicke appeal that. More than 200 musicians have filed a legal brief supporting Williams and Thicke. Some of those names include the members of Tool, Linkin Park, R. Kelly, Jennifer Hudson, film composer Hans Zimmer. They have all filed an amicus brief in court supporting the appeal. Many musicians have voiced concern over this ruling. The brief says, in part, that this ruling will punish songwriters whose compositions are inspired by prior works. And the brief says all musical compositions come from prior works. It will eliminate any meaningful standard for drawing the line between permissible inspiration and unlawful copying. That will stifle creativity and will impede the creative process. Essentially, it's going to have a chilling effect on songwriters going forward. Pharrell, Thicke, and T.I. filed the appeal last week. T.I. was found not liable in the original ruling. Jim, I think as long as music has existed, there have been squabbles between songwriters who say, well, you stole my music. The first one I can remember was back in the 1970s when George Harrison was accused of stealing He's So Fine for his song My Sweet Lord, and George settled. These lawsuits are extremely common. I think a lot of people in the musical community feel that this Blurred Lines ruling has set a very dangerous precedent, and the amicus brief specified that, in fact, there were very few appreciable similarities between Gotta Give It Up and Blurred Lines, at least in terms of the law.
There are only so many notes and chords that you can play. The combinations of those, you know, are going to sound a little bit familiar or close at times.
That's absolutely true. And in this age of sampling, it becomes an even more salient fact. Who is to say what constitutes a ripoff and what constitutes a salute? or a tribute. And I think it was Oscar Wilde who said, mediocrity borrows, genius steals.
There you go. Well, our genius in the top 20 realm is our own Ray McDonald. You can find him each and every week right here on VOA 1 every Thursday. And also on Twitter.
At Ray on the Hits.
Ray, thanks so much.
You got it, Jim.
That is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. We have a range of stories that might interest you from all over the world. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is gravely concerned about specific accusations of abuse and torture that were made during the trial of 23 persons arrested following June 29th riots in Nouakchott, the capital of Mauritania. The arrest followed a protest against eviction by residents of a squatter camp in the capital, many of whom are former slaves. The protest turned violent when demonstrators threw stones and burned a police bus. 9 police and other Mauritanian citizens were injured. The United States condemns the serious injuries and associated property damage. The United States is concerned with reports of coerced confessions or statements obtained through torture, raising serious concerns as to whether each accused individual received a fair trial. The U.S. will closely follow an anticipated appeal process. Among those sentenced are 13 members of the Resurgence of Abolitionist Movement, an organization championing the anti-slavery movement in Mauritania. Mauritania was the last country in the world to officially abolish slavery in 1981. Nevertheless, slavery continues in the West African nation, where an estimated 4 to 20% of Mauritania's 3.5 million people are enslaved. The United States urges an immediate and comprehensive investigation into all credible allegations of torture, public release of findings of this investigation, and appropriate prosecution of any individuals whom the investigation finds were responsible for such acts. Mauritania enshrined its commitment against torture by characterizing it as a crime against humanity in the 2012 revision of the Mauritanian Constitution, and in April of this year established in law the National Mechanism for the Prevention of Torture, which has been partially staffed but not fully funded. The United States strongly encourages Mauritania to respect human rights and fundamental freedoms, including freedoms of expression and association for all Mauritanians. The U.S. supports fair trial guarantees, transparent and credible judicial processes, and respect for the human rights of all individuals.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz, past and present, and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays on voanews.com and The Voice.